Greetings, salutations, and welcome to the Plains Talkers Podcast. This is a show dedicated to the discussion of the standard game of Magic the Gathering. I am your host, Will Benson, joined as always by my faithful compatriot, Aramis. Welcome, Aramis. This is episode one.
Episode one? Yay.
Episode one.
All right, I like the sound of that.
So, well, you know what? We folks, it's kind of funny. We've done an episode already. So just to pull that curtain a little bit, we do have an episode zero. It's up on our feed. It'll be taken out at some point. I just did that so it was easier to share with Aramis. It's bad. He's not good.
It's mostly my fault because the mic I was using was a pile of hot garbage.
Yes, like your game. So, ba-doom, ting.
Okay, so that already means we were first. Sorry. Would that mean it's time for our first inside joke when I simply reply by saying 52-1?
Let's never talk of it again. It was 51-1, wasn't it? No, it was 52-1.
It was 52-1. I vividly remember. We're going to have to talk about that at some point.
Yeah, now we have to. I mean, it's how do you not talk about it? But folks, welcome to the first episode of Magic, the Planeswalkers Podcast. We call this the Standard Podcast, and here's why. It's me and Perez here. We've known each other for a long time, and about 3 years now, and well, actually two, and we've been playing Magic together, and we'll get into our backgrounds, but basically because he got back in about 2 years ago and I got back in about four, our Magic experience, I guess, is limited pretty much to the standard game. So yep. I got out around Exodus, and that's about when you got back in or got into it the first time. So
no, that was before that.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
So the end of the day, and we realized too, I mean, I've been doing the, you know, I drive an hour to work every day. I listen to a ton of podcasts, and I realized when I went looking for Magic podcasts that very few of the podcasts out there talk about the standard game. Really, they spend a lot of time in Modern, a lot of time in Legacy, and I get that. It's where a lot of the fun stuff is, and a lot of the great mechanics and the old mechanics, and there's so much that can happen, and so much going on, and especially where the standard game was just even 6 months ago, which is basically like, if you didn't have red-black aggro, you didn't win, period. So I get it, I understand it, but however, you know, for new and for, you know, people just coming into the game, especially those playing Arena, standard's where you're going to start. You know, it's the cheapest one to get into. It's the easiest to find the cards. And so, you know, I thought we'd do something where we could kind of discuss that a little bit. And you know, so that's kind of where we're at. So without further ado, let me talk to you a little bit. We're gonna talk a little bit now about what we do, where we're from, how we started playing Magic. So, you know, Aramis, and this again, this gentleman over to my right, logistically, because we're totally not in the same place.
Not even close.
Yeah, not even close. Like difference between shooting a bullet and throwing it. But the person to my right, Aramis, why don't you tell everybody about Magic? How you got into the game? Like, why are you hosting a podcast? Is probably what somebody's probably sitting in their car wondering right now.
Because I had nothing else better to do. Actually,
well,
that's not
a great
true.
Answer. Great answer. Good job. Yeah. Well, it was fun having a podcast.
Bye, everybody.
All right. So,
I got started, I want to say, God, having to actually think about it, it's probably over 20 years ago was when I started playing. God, that dates me so much. I was probably 16, 17 years old. I had just picked up a paper route, and the person I was taking it from, he invited me over to his house. He was a couple years younger than me, and he's like, "Hey, I got this great game I've been playing. You know, do you want to give it a shot? It's called Magic." And I was like, "Oh, what's this about?" So he got, you know, I go over there. He shows me the game. We play a couple games, and I instantly get hooked. So I buy some of my own cards, go back to his house, and we play some more. And for the first couple of months I was playing, I got crushed every single time.
Sounds like what happened to me in the early days, but go on.
Yep. So, you know, I had no idea how to build a deck, how to really play effectively. My education was a trial by fire. probably lost my first 36 games in a row. But I was having a blast. I mean, it was totally one of the most fun experiences I've ever had. And I got better, you know, after every successive stomping that I received. And I eventually won my first game. Got to the point where over the next few years, in the little play group that we had put together, I ended up being probably one of the best, if not the best player in our small little group. But I'm not a pro by any means. I have no pro tour points. I've only been to a couple of PPTQs. I've only been to one actual pro tour qualifier back when that was the only way to get in, when there weren't any preliminaries. I've been to one GP back in 2001, I believe. So, wow. You know, I'm not a pro. And I don't claim to be a pro, but I, you know, I had aspirations the first time I played. I stopped about, I want to say 2003, right after the release of Champions of Kamigawa.
Wow.
Yeah, I survived barely the Affinity Standard metagame, which was one of the most broken and degenerate standard formats of all time.
Right.
Which was another one of the reasons that I actually stopped playing, because it was not competitive and it was not fun, because it was, you were either playing Affinity or you were playing to beat Affinity. And I didn't find that fun. So I put the game down. And, you know, it wasn't worth the money I was investing into it, because, surprise, Magic's not a cheap game.
No. No, it is not.
It can be inexpensive if you do it certain ways, but if you want to compete, you have to put the resources into it. So I didn't really want to do that at that point anymore. I still kind of sort of kept up with it a little bit. Right. I would check the Magic website every now and then when a set came out, saying, oh, this card looks ridiculous. This is kind of cool. But more or less sort of stopped. And then a couple of years ago, I started working at a place where our friend William works still.
Where everybody knows your name.
Yeah. Well, everybody knows your last name.
Yeah, I thought about that. We can talk about that at another point, yeah.
Yeah, that's a different discussion for a different day. But we were in a meeting, and we were in the auditorium of one of our buildings, and I was walking down the aisle, and I noticed Will playing Magic Duels.
Duels of the Planeswalker, yeah.
Duels of the Planeswalkers on his tablet. And I'm like, oh, you play Magic. I used to play that. He's like, yeah, it's really fun. So a couple months later, we had some event where it was sort of a relaxing day for the staff, and he's like, hey, you want to grab a couple Planeswalker decks and maybe play? I'm like, I don't know if I want to take this particular red pill again. So was it a blue pill?
It doesn't matter.
Anyway,
you take the blue pill, you stay in Wonderland.
Yeah, I went back to Wonderland, and this is, yeah. I've dove in head first. You know, I would like to eventually qualify for the Pro Tour. It's a really one of those super, super stretch goals.
Well, now with arenas, if you've taken a look, they're going arena. Like, the Pro Tour is arena.
Kinda, yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
So you might have a shot. You might have the best shot you've had in a while.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, it would still be a huge grind, but, you know, I still fancy myself a, not so much a casual, but I'm fairly competitive. So yeah. I mean, that's basically, you know, a quick little breakdown of how I got into the game. So I'm gonna shut up for a few minutes and let Will take his turn. And
thank you very much. He
can tell you about how I stomped him for the first few months.
Let's not discuss that. Let's see. I've been playing almost since beta. That was the first set I got. It was 1993. I was in college. I was doing a show, a play, and yeah, while we were sitting there between rehearsals, these guys just broke out cards. I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, I've seen this a bunch of times. And they're like, dude, it's Magic. And I'm like, well, okay, what, it was like D&D, but with like poker cards? Or what are we doing here? And he's like, well, no, it's like that, but you know, it's like chess. And they sat me down and they're like, here, try it. And I, you know, tapping mana and stuff. I'm like, okay, I kind of get this. And I went and I got, I think I started with Arabian Nights. And then, you know, moved my way through. I kept buying. I bought packs here and there. I really, really got into it around 4th and Ice Age. So, like, for 2 years, I was just kind of like a casual, like, hey, I had some cards to play with. And I built a deck. Because you could buy what used to be starter packs, which was the brown box. And it had a completely playable deck. You didn't know what was in it. but you had a completely playable deck, and it wasn't really themed. It wasn't until Ice Age where it was themed. And I think, I'm trying to remember.
No, I think the pre-constructed decks didn't come out until, I think, Tempest.
I think they had the brown pre-constructs deck then, too, didn't they?
No, it was just it was the starter deck. You could get it was 60 cards. It had a bunch of lands. Right. It was almost like buying like 3 or 4 booster packs, but you got a bunch of lands too.
Right, that's what it was. So and then you'd build decks out of that. And I bought a few of those. And then I played almost all the way up to the last set I bought was Exodus. So and I was in and out. And I mean I wasn't anybody competitive by any stretch. I'm in college at this time. And then when I got out of college, I realized that I liked girls. So I liked girls in college, but they liked me better outside. And so I started to focus more on that. And so, you know, plus you're an adult and stuff. So I kind of put it down right around Exodus. And then in around 2003, and every once in a while, I'd buy some Urza, Saga, or I'd buy a Legacy. Like, I'd buy a pack here or there. I'd be like, I should get back into this. But I couldn't find anybody to play with. So then basically in 2002 got married. And my ex-wife was like, find out how much was it worth. Just wondering. So we did, and I was like, oh, look, $2,000. We could get a car on that, just saying. So
yay, adult stuff.
Yeah, so I sold my set, and I'm still kicking myself because I think right now that set would be worth...
What?
Well, it had beta cards. So, yeah. I mean, it did, you know. Let me put it to you this way, guys. I saw Black Lotus played in a game, saw it happen. Was like, wow. So that's how long I've been around. I got out of it. I got out of it from 2002 almost all the way. I think the first set I bought back in was, I think it was a Zendikar, but not Zendikar, the original. It was like the
new one. Kaladesh?
No, I got into Kaladesh, but I started buying again because I had those full lands. So I started getting back in right around Battle for Zendikar was when I got back. And I bought some Magic Origin cards then too, and I kind of went back a little bit. If I saw something, I grabbed some. I had some Fate Reforged. I got back in, started playing a little bit, had a big life change, moved out to the capital region of New York where, you know, I started working, and then, like, you know, Aramis said, we were sitting there and, you know, he sees me at work one day playing that, and I needed friends, so I joined my local game shop, and I drafted Kaladesh, and I drafted, you know, all the Aether Revolt, all of that. And from then on, I've been playing pretty standard, not very well. The first couple of months back, I was playing with, you and I were playing every day, and I think you had me at, like, I think I was, like, you know, like 10 and 82. So he was keeping track. It was annoying. It was really, really annoying.
I'm a little obsessive about stuff like that. Yeah. So, you know, I want to see how I'm doing. So if I know if I'm losing a lot against a particular deck, I know to either tune the deck that I'm playing or change the deck I'm playing based on what I'm playing against. Was that your win percentage going down?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So it was rough, and then basically, I got the genius idea. He was playing with me with this freaking God Pharaoh deck. I'm like, I can build that. I got most of those cards. So I mirrored that, and then all of a sudden, I was like, okay, I want to try this mono red. And then I started getting into the meta game a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the meta game is scary, and that's part of why we're doing this podcast, folks, is that, yeah, okay, when you're playing with your buddies and stuff, it's cool to build decks and get all janky and fun. But if you really want to start getting into, like, some competitive play and winning a little bit, and even on Arena, you got to start. It's the meta game.
Whole different ball game.
When we say metagame, and people, again, so this is kind of geared to that. What do they mean when they say metagame, Aramis? Like, explain it.
The metagame is basically, you know, you have your standard game of Magic. It's a game everybody loves and plays. You play your cards, you cast your spells, woohoo, good time. The metagame basically means what's being played in this certain area that they're looking at. In this case, tournaments. And the tournament metagame, it's generally between, you know, 5 to 10 different decks, sometimes more, sometimes less, depending on the health and card pool available to you. But it's basically a selection of decks that are being played at the highest level, and you can pick one of those. If you have the cards to do it, you can build it, and, you know, these decks are tuned to play against the other decks. Right. So it's I don't want to say rock, paper, scissor type of thing, but it's similar to that, where you have aggro, you have mid-range, you have control, you have combo. These archetypes of decks that, you know, you can dive into whatever your play style is, or some, you know, if you're a certain type of person, you just decide, I'm just going to play the best deck at the moment, which in the current standard metagame, the consensus is generally Golgari midrange. It's at least the most popular deck. We're actually lucky enough to be in a format right now where the metagame is very healthy, and pretty much whatever deck you decide you want to play has a legitimate shot of winning a tournament.
Totally.
So. Yeah, that's basically, like, you know, what a metagame is in a nutshell. So, like I said, you know, for the current standard metagame, I mean, if you want to look at it, it's, I want to say, look here, 4, 8, 12. There's 12 decks, at least.
Yeah. It's definitely different now. The metagame is definitely... really, when we say the metagame, when you hear metagame, it's almost always talking about these tournament style level decks, like you said, that are tuned to play with each other and tuned to win, really. Mm-hmm. These guys that tend to do the meta decks, they tend to be what are called the pros. Now, some of them are, this is all they do, and they get sponsorships, and, you know, this is how they actually make their living, and they, you know, they get 9 times out of 10. I mean, do they buy their own cards? I mean, they get given cards, I gotta assume.
I would assume so. I mean, if I was at that level, I would tell you. But I would, if I had to wager a guess, I would say that they either get cards or they're able to, like, sort of borrow / keep cards, right, from their sponsor, saying, hey, I'm going to go to this tournament, I'm going to play Golgari midrange, I need 4 Vraska's Contempts. Boop, there you go.
There you go. Thanks for playing, but make sure you wear a sign on your shirt that says, you know, Star City Games.
And you win or you die.
Right. I mean, and that's just it. I mean, it things are a little different now. We could talk about this in the arena segment, because with the arena and the move to esports, I mean, we are actually going to have professional players, people that do this for a living. But yeah, I mean, the money really, I mean, so these guys do that. They spend all day crafting these decks, and then they go to tournaments and they do them. And and then what happens is that what I really love about this, and I was thinking about this earlier today, it's like, you know, when I first got into Magic, when you wanted to build decks, you pretty much, you built the deck, because there was very little internet. There was no real deck list to speak of except in Inquest. When did they start publishing them online?
Like, oh, geez, I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, back then, though, I mean, I was pretty much on my own. You built to play against other people. I mean, it was more fun. I had Janky of the Janks. I had Sliver decks. I had a Tim deck. I miss Tim. the Prodigal Sorcerer, guys, look him up. He's right now, he'd get rolled, but back then, he was stupid powerful. It's pretty much why you played Control, was to have a Tim deck. It's just various... the metagame is really kind of great, and it's always changing. We're about to go in 2 weeks. We have a week actually. We have the pre-release for the new Magic set, and with that, we're going to see a monster shift in the metagame. We're going to go through that when we go to Ravnica Legion spoilers, because I think it's going to have a monstrous impact on the current metagame.
Yeah, and there's a couple cards in particular that I want to talk about that I think are going to have an impact.
Yeah, because I mean, it's just. It's stupid. And I think we can kind of pivot to that. Like you know, let's get into that right now, the spoilers for Ravnica Allegiance, because, you know, we spent 20 minutes now just talking about us, and I imagine, you know, people want to, you know. So
we've put them to sleep already.
Yes, welcome. They've driven their cars into, you know.
Oh.
So let's take a look. Let's go to, you know, the Ravnica Allegiance spoilers. So, for those of you that don't know, Ravnica Allegiance is the next set to come from Wizards. It's basically designed, it's the second cycle, it's the last cycle of this Ravnica set, right? Well, they haven't told us what the third one is.
Yeah, the first set focused on 5 particular guilds. Right. This next set is going to focus on the other 5 guilds of Ravnica. And the third set is going to be this big culmination of the story that they've been telling over the last couple of years with the Guild Pact and Nicol Bolas, and it's going to be this big, huge, I'm assuming, battle. And they're going to end the current storyline, I believe, after the next set. So I imagine there's going to be a lot of characters that are going to die.
Hopefully one of them is Nicol Bolas, I have to be honest. I'm done. You blew your wad on that one. So, but it's definitely, I'm ready for it. But
yeah.
So let's take a look. You know what I'm doing, Aramis? I don't know what that was. That was weird. That was really, really weird. Okay, then.
We'll have to cut that out.
Yeah.
Or leave it in and scare the crap out of our listeners.
Well, what's weird is it looked like it was going over my mic. So I was like, okay.
Huh.
So.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So, Ravnica Allegiance. All right. So what I'm doing here is I just pull up TCG Player. And we go down the list of cards, because that's really kind of... There are so many spoiler sites and so many different... Like, I figure this is the best way to go. You know, so let's get into it. First of all, like, if you want, you've seen all the spoilers. What are you most looking forward to?
There's a couple of cards.
Well, let's go with... You know, let's start at macro, work our way to micro. All right. We have the five guilds coming out, which are Gruul...
You got Gruul, you got Orzhov, you have Simic, Azorius, and Rakdos.
Yes.
Azorius and Rakdos. So your color combinations. He's
actually getting a Rakdos card, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, he shows up pretty much every time.
Yeah.
But so your color combinations are blue-white, white-black, red-black, red-green, and blue-green.
Right. So, all right, that being said, which guild do you think is getting the biggest bump?
I would say right now it's still Azorius, although there have been a couple cards that have come out for Rakdos / Gruul that I'm like, okay, these are really good. They've all gotten some great toys, I will say that.
Yes.
Every color combination, this is going to open up probably 3 to 6 new decks at least, archetypes. It might revive... a couple of decks, or what's the word I'm thinking of? Sort of like rejuvenate other decks that have sort of taken a back seat. Turbo Fog. Right. That, you know, they're not very good right now in the metagame. It's just because they're missing some pieces, and I think they get some of those pieces with this new set.
I totally agree.
I would say, case in point, I think one of the cards that's going to be the biggest impact is going to be Absorb. It's actually a reprint. this is a card. A legacy card, yep, that it will finally be legal in Modern, and I believe this will see play in Modern and in Standard. It is simply a instant for a white and 2 blue that says, counter target spell, you gain 3 life.
Which, with all your other target counter spells of, like, what do you call it there,
Sinister Sabotage.
Yep.
Devious
Cover-Up.
Devious Cover-Up.
Like, you're getting all these other... Yeah, it's like, it's going to be... Isn't there another one that counters and takes life?
This was... Absorb was part of it was never really a cycle, but there was another card in the same set, because Absorb was originally printed in Invasion.
Yes.
And the other half of the coin to Absorb was Undermine, which is a card that I'm surprised this card hasn't been reprinted, like it wasn't reprinted in the last set, because it's a very, very... Dimir card. It's 2 blue and a black, counter target spell. Its spell's controller loses 3 life.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was really surprised there's no Undermine. That was what I was trying to remember was.
My thought is that if they're going to reprint it, they're going to reprint it in the next set.
Yeah.
Because they have now, there's a counter spell now for every color combination that goes with blue, except for black.
It'll probably be in there. You're not wrong. I have to agree with you. Azorius seems to be getting the biggest, best upgrades and toys. You know, not just Absorb, but what the hell was her name? Lavinia or Ladina?
Lavinia is a card that I think will probably see some play in Vintage.
Because, well, it's just ridiculous. If you can't, it shuts, it pretty much, doesn't it shut down Tron?
Well, here it is. It is a 2/2 legendary human soldier for a white and a blue. So it's already a hate bear. Each opponent can't cast non-creature spells with converted mana cost greater than the number of lands that player controls. So that shuts off, in a certain sense.
It shuts off Tron.
Shuts off ramping of any kind. It also says whenever an opponent casts a spell, if no mana was spent to cast it, counter that spell, which means Force of Will gets shut off. Now, Force of Will was an old counter spell that you could pay a life and exile a blue card from your hand instead of paying for it.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's going to get... A lot of things. I mean, there are other toys that do that anyway. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, that card I think will see some serious play. I mean, I'll say this. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if it only ends up as a sideboard card.
Yeah, probably. It's definitely going to be good in limited.
Yeah.
Because it's a 2/2 hate bear. And again, if it stops them from casting things with more land than they've got, this is really designed for modern. Now that I really think about it, I don't even know that I'd take it in a draft. Because, I mean, it's a good card to have. It's good to have in the toolbox. I'd do it for, you know, to draft it to have it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Would you use this in a limited sense?
Well, considering that the limited environment it would be in is only Ravnica Allegiance, and I don't see much in the way of artifact mana and lands that tap for multiple mana, I would say it's not very good in limited. It's definitely more of one of those constructed silver bullet sideboard hate cards that they print every now and then, and that they've been printing more of these every set to try to give answers to perceived threats in the metagame. So in this case, it's Tron.
Totally agree. Let's see. What else have we got here?
There's more toys for Azorius because they have all their stuff with the new keyword ability of Addendum. So the one that screams to me as begging to be abused, whether or not it will be is another story, but it's begging for it, is Emergency Powers. Now, spells with Addendum, these are all, as far as I've seen so far, they're all instants that have an effect, but if you play them during your main phase, they give you an additional effect. So basically what Emergency Powers does is it's an instant for 5, a white and a blue, and it says each player shuffles their hand and graveyard into their library, then draw 7 cards, and you exile Emergency Powers. So it's the old Time Twister card just for an extra, 4 mana?
Yep.
Which, okay, that's not terrible, but for cards printed these days, that's still pretty good. The addendum effect says, however, if you cast this spell during your main phase, not only do you get the Time Twister effect, you may also put a permanent card with converted mana cost 7 or less from your hand onto the battlefield. So you get to play something big for free.
Yep.
So in standard, that would be, okay, I'm going to Emergency Powers and cast a free Teferi.
Yep.
And if that doesn't scare you, it should.
It really should. Well, and with that, though, Mass Manipulation is another one that can really get stupid with that. I mean, as far as late game goes, it's 4 blue and 2 X. And basically, it's a sorcery. And it says, gain control of X target creatures and or planeswalkers.
Yep.
Oh, my God. So, round 10, you've got 10 mana. Say you put out an 11th or whatever. Yes, cast 4 blue. And that leaves you 6 left. You could take 3 creatures.
Or 3 planeswalkers.
Or 3 planeswalkers. Do they come with the loyalty counters?
Actually, yeah, they would. Because they're changing sides. And anything that they have at that point would come with them.
Could you imagine taking control of somebody's Teferi on 7?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or 8. I'm sorry, on 8.
Yeah.
They've played their turn. They're about to, you know, emblem it.
They're about to ultimate, and you're like, yeah, that's mine.
Oh, and so now you exile whatever I draw.
Yeah.
Haha, screw off.
So with this card, the way I see this card being played, if it sees play, it will almost never get cast for more than 6 mana.
No.
I think
I think it will. I think it'll go for 10. I think people will take 3 things at once. You're probably right. Probably.
I mean, at 8 mana, you're stealing 2 things. And if you're stealing, I would say I would ignore the gaining control of creatures part for now. Because there's, you know, a decent amount of creatures in the format that you'd want to steal. You know, like a Lyra or, I don't know.
I would take Niv.
Yeah, you could take Niv. Yeah, Niv-Mizzet. But then, you know, you'd much rather steal somebody's Vivian Reed or their Vraska or, hell, their Teferi.
Yeah. You know, they can't take, you know, obviously they can't take the Carnage Tyrant and Golgari or things like that.
Right.
Actually, Golgari's pretty good with regards to that. I mean, there's the Golgari's biggest threat, the Doom Whisperer.
Steal the Doom Whisperer, yeah.
But then I just take it down, you know, surveil, find a way to kill it.
Yeah, but then you're still wasting a card killing your own creature. Right.
Yeah,
it just which sucks. That grants you an advantage. Plus, you've made them burn all that life to find that answer, and they've milled a bunch of cards.
Yep, I think that card is stupid. I think that's an end game card that we'll see. You get if you pull that in a limited, you take it. You absolutely take it. I'm sorry. I like that card.
Well, here's a card in Gruul that I think is going to be very good and reminds me a lot of Fires of Yavimaya.
Okay.
It's called, and this is based on a translation, it's called Rhythm of Savagery. It's an enchantment for a 1, a red, and a green. Creature spells you control can't be countered. Non-token creatures you control have Riot, which means they either enter the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter or they have haste.
Wow.
I think this card is going to revive the old Fires of Yavimaya red-green, like, mid-range slash aggro deck. There was a red-green monsters deck that was popular in the format about a year ago. I think this card will bring it back.
Well, I think Riot as a mechanic. We can kind of pivot off of Azorius. I mean, we don't have to talk about Dovin. You know he's going to be good.
Yeah.
And pivot to Gruul, because I think out of all the mechanics I've seen for this set, Riot's the one that's just broken. Maybe not broken, but definitely...
it's abusable.
Yeah. The ability to enter with a 1-1 counter and to be able... or have haste on these big monsters, because it's Gruul, so they're designed to be big, dumb, and fast, is... yeah. I think Gruul's going to see a lot of play in Limited. I don't know how much it's going to see in Constructed. There are ways around it.
I have two words for you, especially with Rhythm of Savagery and the new standard coming up. Rekindling Phoenix.
Ooh.
Think about it.
Yeah.
So, okay, can't counter the Phoenix.
Nope.
It can come into play with haste if you want it to, or, hell, put it with the +1/+1 counter.
Well,
all right.
It comes in with the 1-1. I would always do the 1 or the haste on the first time.
And... yeah, so they say they kill it. The little egg token comes in. You could give that a +1/+1 counter if you wanted to. Or haste. I mean, a 0/1 haste is useless, but still.
Oh, snap.
And then, Phoenix comes back. It entered the battlefield. Let's give it a +1/+1 counter because it already has haste.
Oh, my God. I never thought of that with the Phoenix counter.
Yeah, so now it's like, always a 5/4 flyer with haste.
Holy shnikes.
And the thing was hard enough to kill already.
You know what? I'm going to take that back. I think we will see some construct. I've said it though, and I'll say it again. I think you're going to see red, green, black, which is what that's the three color.
Oh, red, green, and black. I forget what that one's called.
I'm looking now.
Well, I mean, think about it too. All those explore creatures. Even if you miss, you can get a +1/+1 counter.
Mm-hmm.
Or Jade Light Ranger, 2 hits plus haste. It's a 4/3 haste for 3 mana, and it can't be countered.
Jund. Holy cow, this is going to regrow Jund.
Yes.
Jund's going to be a thing.
I don't even think so much Jund. I just think Gruul. Because red has plenty of ways to apply pressure and remove permanents. And green can do the same thing.
Yeah, but some of the black, especially the stuff we're coming, Gutter Bones, you know, comes in with that. And some of the black mechanics. Spectacle. To be able to pull Spectacle in.
Hmm.
As well as Riot, I'm sorry. I could see those mechanics.
Playing. Here's my question about Riot, since we don't know yet. Is it stackable? Because Xur'Tah Goblin is also another card I think will be in that deck. It's a 2/2 for a red and a green with Riot. So if you have the Rhythm of Savagery and you cast a Xur'Tah Goblin, does that mean it's automatically a 3/3 haste, or can you make him a 4/4?
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know if you have the Rhythm of Savagery. You know, well, let's see if there's a ruling on it yet. Would it be in Gatherer yet?
They would not be there yet because technically the set's not out. So that's a question we're going to have to wait to answer until the pre-release. But if that is cumulative, where it's able to stack on top of itself, this has the makings of an extremely good aggressive deck that I think I think could be top of the middle game.
Oh, no, wait. No, it's not.
No, Riot's a new mechanic.
No, it's just the creature spells you control can't be countered. I mean, that's just... wow.
Yeah. In and of itself, that's already really good. But giving everybody Riot and then taking advantage of that... you know, you build it around creature with enter the battlefield abilities or things that are already big and stupid to begin with.
Right.
You know, Steelleaf Champion.
Yep. Oh, my... oh, God.
Galta.
Yeah, well, Galta, yeah, I love Galta. He's just big, dumb, and green. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Galta was so big and so bad and so amazing, and now it's like he's not getting any more of the love because, you know, it's like there's so much. That's how the metagame has changed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's weird too. And I mean, I was looking yesterday at some of the stuff. I mean, I got another Galta yesterday because I mean we could talk about this at some point. I got the Magic home game. For the kids.
Nice.
For us and the kids, because I really want to get them into Magic, which if you don't know what that is, guys, we'll talk about that at some point, because I think that's kind of a really great product as far as, you know what, it takes away all the scariness of construction. It takes away, you know, me walking in through the door. I don't think I ever told you this. I played with my stepson's, he had a friend over, and he's like, I like to play Magic. I'm like, let's sit down and play. So I roll out my first, you know, meta deck. I pulled out my red deck and it was four rounds, and he was like, oh. I'm like, oh no, let me switch up, I'll play my dinosaur deck. Yeah, that didn't go well either. Then I was like, oh, I'll keep my merfolk. Yeah. So I just kept, and I mean, I've got all these tuned decks, and here he is playing these decks that he just kind of threw together. So the cool thing I like about the home game is like, okay, we can sit down, we can play Magic, and it takes away my ability, because I have a lot more disposable income than you, of building these decks with these really great cards and these tuned and all that. And I'm playing a deck that kind of, we're all kind of equal.
Yeah.
So, you know, it makes it fun. But besides that, getting back to Ravnica Allegiance. Yeah, I think the Riot is stupid. I think Spectacle is going to be fun. Spectacle is, you may cast a spell for Spectacle cost rather than its mana cost if an opponent lost a life this turn. 9 times out of 10, it's lower. By 1 or 2, usually colorless mana, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. It's like I look at Jund, and you put Spectacle with Riot, and then throw in what was the white mechanic in the last set?
Mentor.
Yeah, Mentor. You throw cheat. You throw red white. You throw Mentor in there. This could get out of control quick. Jund's going to be huge.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you just have to watch out for the mana basis, because it looks like they really try to push towards two colors. With the way the current meta is broken down, I don't know if there's not a ton of three color decks that are floating around out there. Especially if you're going to be aggressive,
Turbo Fog.
but that's not an aggressive deck.
True.
That's the thing. Like if you're going three colors, you're going to want to be at least mid range or slower. Red green, you're going to want to smash their face in. Although I think Spectacle, there's one card in particular I think I could see that being played in Golgari, the mid range deck, and that's Spawn of Mayhem.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
So Spawn of Mayhem is a 4/4 flying trample demon for 2 and 2 black, which is already a pretty good deal. Has Spectacle of 1 and 2 black. So if an opponent lost life this turn, which in the Golgari deck is quite possible because you probably dropped a Land of War Elf on turn 1 or a Branchwalker on turn 2, and you know, you hit him in the face. So he effectively costs 3. And he says at the beginning of your upkeep, Spawn of Mayhem deals 1 damage to each player. Then if you have 10 or less life, put a +1/+1 counter on Spawn of Mayhem. So this sort of helps you if you're losing, puts you on your own clock, unfortunately, but he's already a big flyer. So I don't know. I could see him seeing some play as an aggressive creature.
Yeah, I could too. You would, well, being a 4 or coming in at 3, turn 3, you have time to lose 1 life each turn. Usually by turn 3, you shouldn't be below, unless you're playing somebody, you know.
Mono red.
Yeah.
You can very easily get 7.
And I'm taking a look here, and I just to look around, Star City Games already has this as an $18 card.
Yeah.
I think that's overpriced. I think it's a good card. I think it's overpriced.
Well, it is a mythic.
Yeah. It's still... Yeah, I don't think it's going to... And that's something we could talk about maybe in the next episode, is the pricing and you know, building and constructing decks. I really want to get into that at some point. And what it takes and what to look for when building a deck, because, you know... You can sometimes, you know, the people that bought Teferi a year ago are sitting pretty right now, because that's a what, $50, $60 card now.
50 plus, yeah. And it started out when that set first came out. It was Karn that everybody was after. Yep. And Teferi's like, oh, he's good. He's kind of okay. And then they realized, oh, it's actually not that hard to ultimate with this guy. And
oh my God.
He also basically only costs 3.
Yes. So I think, you know, so definitely we'll get into that. But so moving around that, let's go to, you know, let's talk about Simic.
Okay.
That's the blue green, right?
Yes.
I always get those.
Yep.
Confused.
Simic is blue green.
No, I'm sorry. They also have some great toys. I love, I absolutely love Grow Spiral, especially for the TurboFog deck.
Yes. TurboFog TurboFog needs to hit its land drops. It can't miss any land drops. And since the deck usually plays so many lands, you know, you're going to have a lot of games where you have like two or three lands in your hand at any point, and Growth Spiral sort of lets you, you know, spit those out a little bit faster, plus it draws you cards, because it literally says, draw a card, and you can put a land from your hand onto the battlefield. Okay.
Well, turn four, all right, you can play two of those and get to six mana in the end of the turn. By the way, it's coming onto the battlefield untapped.
Yeah, and it's also an instant, so it's on their end step.
Right. So turn four, all right, say you get... You have, and you have a blue or green in your hand, you could actually go from four to seven that you need to cast Turbo Fog next turn.
Mm-hmm.
And cast Turbo Fog on turn five, technically.
And by Turbo Fog, he means Nexus of Fate.
Yes, yes, which is, if you don't know what Nexus of Fate is, that was the, was it Core 19 pre-release?
It was a Core 19 Biobox promo.
The Biobox, that's it.
Also known as Wizard's Last Great Mistake.
Yes. Oh, no, it's not their last.
Okay, the last of the last, you know, 20 minutes.
Not the final mistake. It was the last one they made, we'll say that.
Most recent mistake.
Most recent mistake is the best way to... Because believe me, they'll make more.
Mm-hmm. It was one of those cards that when you see it, it just says, break me, please.
It really was. And so there... And we have, me and Aramis both play Turbo Fog a lot, and we'll talk about that in Arena. But I really like what's going on. Blue and green is obviously they're going to... They've always been big on counters, and this is a pretty counter-heavy, you know... It's going to get you a lot of counters, which in my Merfolk deck means, hallelujah, God bless America. The mechanic for it, I'm trying to find the mechanic, right? The Adapt, right?
Yep, it's called Adapt.
So basically it says if this creature has no 1/1 counters on it, put two 1/1 counters on it for three mana, or whatever the mana is. I was looking at Growth Chamber Guardian right now.
Yeah, because there's a card with Adapt 1, there's a card with Adapt 4.
So it's pretty much, it lets you put counters on things that don't have them. And then if you're playing, what the hell's the name of that card there, that Merfolk card that's anything with counters on it becomes unblockable. That's just it. That could be abused.
That's Herald of Secret Streams. Yes.
So, I mean, the Herald card is going to... Believe it or not, I could see Simic becoming something again. And I'm looking right now at Growth Chamber Guardian because I think that card's stupid too. Whenever one or more counters are put on Growth Chamber Guardian, you search your library for a card named Growth Chamber Guardian, reveal it, put it in your hand, shuffle your library. So for two, you get to put it back out again. It's basically Legion's Lieutenant. And you put it out again, and then three more, put another counter on it, go find another one, you know, two counters.
I like the mechanic as well. I would say so far the mechanics that have been previewed, I don't want to say it's the weakest, because it's not a weak mechanic by any means, but I think it's probably the one that'll be the hardest to really maximize. You don't see anybody playing really much Undergrowth from the last set, but you see some Mentor, you know, you see Split Second quite a bit, you see Surveil. And you definitely see Convoke, but you don't really see very much in the way of Undergrowth. I think, unfortunately, Adapt is going to fall into that fifth spot. Doesn't mean it's bad. I just think it's going to be the hardest to abuse.
Unless you see it at a tournament. Unless somebody comes up with the perfect Merfolk or whatever combination deck from Ixalan. Which, that's just it. Because the standard is going to include Ixalan. I could see this being abused. Because the Merfolk in Ixalan and Return to Ixalan, or Battle... What the hell was it?
Oh, Rivals of Ixalan?
Rivals of Ixalan. The Merfolk in there were designed for counters.
Yeah.
And some of them were ramping counters really quickly. You put those together.
Yeah.
Like, that's just it. I think from a metagame perspective, I could see that becoming... You know, if Churn 4, you're getting creatures out there that are 7, 8 tall, and you paid, you know, it's Churn 4.
Mm-hmm.
It's something. You know, I don't know.
Well, going back to how we were touching on Turbo Fog.
Right.
I remember texting this to you as soon as I saw it, and I said, oh, here's the first broken uncommon. Wilderness Reclamation. This is an enchantment for 3 and a green that simply says, at the beginning of your end step, untap all lands you control. So, all right. you know, Nexus of Fate costs 7 mana. Teferi costs 5 mana. Turbo Fog is a very mana-hungry deck. It likes to tap out. It flips over Search for Ezcanta into Ezcanta the Sunken Ruin, and it loves to be able to activate that twice per turn once it's going off. This allows you to do it an extra time. Because all you need is the initial 4 mana. Not even, actually. So you activate Ezcanta during your turn, do whatever the heck else you want, just leave at least one or two other lands untapped at the end of your turn if you've activated Teferi. His trigger goes on the stack along with the trigger for Wilderness Reclamation.
Right.
You use Teferi's, you have Teferi's trigger resolve first, activate Ezcanta, grab whatever cards you want, let Wilderness Reclamation resolve, untap everything else, activate it again. Oh, look, there's a Nexus of Fate. Extra turn.
Yeah, that card's going to break. That's going to be broken. I may actually order that because I have a feeling. I'm thinking about ordering 4 of those right now because I think the prices on those aren't terrible.
It's an uncommon.
Yes.
It is going to be very easily available. That is the scary. They put this thing at uncommon.
Well, don't forget, though, there are some serious uncommons that are harder to get in almost every set.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be as hard to find as Fatal Push was.
Yeah, that's just it. Like, Fatal Push was ridiculous.
Fatal Push is a $9 uncommon.
Right. And this could go up to that. Right now it's a $246.
Yeah. Because they see this card is busted in half. It's free mana.
It's
they're supposed to not do this anymore.
But I think that's what they're trying to do now. I think with all of this, it's they're trying to get back into, you know, making Magic fun again. And I'm sorry, the way that they sit there with the free mana and the stuff that was in Legacy, that was when it was fun. That's why people play that stuff. Mm-hmm. And when you get too restrictive, you take away the fun.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Now, I don't think they want to go back to the days of where, you know, I'm going to kill you on turn one and the game degenerates to a point of who can get their bonkers, broken, crazy combo off first.
Right, they're never going to go that, like take away all the fun of turn one.
But I think they're trying to push the envelope back to as far as they can to having powerful Magic. Although I would believe they're finally there when they reprint Birds of Paradise.
Right.
Or the fetch lands.
Yes. Everybody wants fetch lands.
Which they're not going to do.
They'll never do it again. No, I don't think so either. I think they'll show up in Modern. I think if they ever do it, well, of course, we're never doing another Master set. Although this one just sold really well, so we may do another one.
Well, I guess what they're going to do, and someone else, I think it was actually Josh Lee Kwai of the Command Zone, had mentioned that, you know, since they said this is the last Master set, the fetch lands weren't included. Okay. They said they're going to be including more reprints and supplemental sets. He was saying the next round of Commander precons, throw a fetch land or two in there.
Ooh.
You know, it not only does it, you know, it makes the product valuable, but it also gives them access to a card. Like, I shouldn't have to pay $75 for a Scalding Tarn.
You're right. I want a Scalding Tarn. I need 4 of them because I'm building the Phoenix deck.
You got $300?
Not handy,
because
no.
That's how much it'll cost you for a playset of Scalding Tarns.
Yeah, kill me. So, anyway, if anyone wants to donate some Scalding Tarns to the podcast, feel free. So, well, let's get to the last one. We've talked about the other 4. Let's, you know, and I mean, we're getting towards, you know, 50 minutes here, so we're going to want to start getting towards the wrap-up. I still want to talk about, but let's talk about, and again, I think this is actually the least mechanic, the Afterlife, the Orzhov Syndicate.
I disagree.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I disagree.
Okay.
I think it's deceptively good, because what it does is it gives you value for your cards.
I get that.
Because, you know, let's find a good one here. Because they haven't really previewed too many either, so keep that in mind.
You're raising a valid point.
Because I think I've only seen like 2 or 3 cards they've used so far with the mechanic. They have shown the mythic with the mechanic, though, which is Seraph of the Scales.
Yeah.
That is a 4/3 angel for 2, a white and a black. Has flying. You could pay a white to give it vigilance until end of turn, or you can pay a black to give it death touch until end of turn, and it has Afterlife 2. So what Afterlife does, it says basically Afterlife is X for the purposes of the explanation.
Right.
When this creature dies, create X 1/1 white and black spirit creature tokens with flying.
Right. Well, then you throw Taysa into it. I might be changing that because I hadn't seen Taysa till just now. All right, if you can get Taysa, that's what Taysa Karloff is, the legend, is the guild champion, the legendary creature.
Not the champion. No, she's only the rare. The mythics are all the right. Guild leaders.
Right. Well, the guild leader. No, this is called the guild champion, and that's Kaya, the usurper. They're saying the legendary planeswalker.
Yeah, she's in charge of the Orzhov.
Yeah. So Taysa Karloff, legendary creature, human advisor, two colorless, white and black. And now I get it. If a creature dying causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. Okay, now you got me.
Yeah. Deceptively and, good.
Yeah, and creature tokens you control have vigilance and lifelink.
Like, value son of engine.
A bitch.
Value engine. And then also keep in mind a card that was previewed.
What? Basilica?
No.
Bellhaunt?
Bankrupt in Blood.
Oh, yeah.
It's a sorcery for a white and a black. As an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice two creatures, draw three cards.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting metagame to be sure.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Ravnica Allegiance comes out next week, is pre-release.
13 days of pre-release, so it's about 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about 2 weeks.
2 weeks away. And I think you and I will probably do that Saturday. I got to check. But definitely we got to, you know, look into that. But you know, let's pivot from that. So that's Ravnica Allegiance. I want to talk about Arena. First of all, so you guys know, we have a Twitch channel now, just created today. So look up Planeswalkers Podcast. We're going to Twitch there. I'm going to try to Twitch there at least once or twice a week. I played a little bit today on mine. You can look me up, Minecraft73. And, you know, it went okay. I had an echo on the one, and I figured out what happened. But you know, we'll be Twitching there, and I'm going to get Aramis the credentials for that.
Why? Well, because I have my own Twitch as well.
Yeah, so, well, I want to Twitch, and we can make it so that, like, you can Twitch on the channel from your Twitch, I think. Mm-hmm. I think there's a way to do that, but I'm just going to log in with that, and I'll give you the password, too, if you want to do that, just so we generate, you know, people looking at it.
Yep.
But that's where we're going to play Arena. Now, if you don't know what Arena is the Windows version, the eSports version, the video game version of Magic. Now, Magic the Gathering Online, MTGO, that's still out there. It's still going to see play. I don't think it's going to see development because they threw $10 million into arenas. But and that's where you would go to play like Modern and stuff. But Arena is where it's where everything's kind of starting to move. They're making the Pro Tour and Pro Points happen there. They're paying, what is it, top $32,000, $75,000 a year to play there.
Something like that, yeah, yeah.
And I guess Pro Tours and things are going to happen, some of them in Arena. I don't like that. I love watching Twitch and watching the guy sit across the table from somebody else.
I don't think that's going away. That's okay. Definitely not going away. I think what they're doing is they're supplementing the Pro Tour with Arena content as well. So that way they can draw in multiple audiences at the same time, because there is something about having that, you know, you're looking over the table and you see both of the players interacting with their cards. I don't see that going away. I don't think they're going to make that go away, because Magic is and always will be a paper game. I do think that coverage will include aspects of both Arena and paper, so they'll have events for both. I think their big championships will be on Arena. My biggest concern is that I hope that those are best of three and not best of one. And I'm afraid it's going to be best of one, and I have some issues with that.
I do too. Well, didn't they just, the last player championship was seven best of ones?
Yeah, that was a tiebreaker playoff for Player of the Year, and I think I get the whole reason why Arena, for those of you who aren't familiar, Arena basically focuses its gameplay on best of one matches. Basically, you play one game, there's no sideboards, and you win, and that's it, and it's over. Whereas traditional competitive Magic is a best of three format, where in between the games of the match, you can sideboard in cards on a one-for-one basis, up to 15 cards, so you can adapt your deck to the person you're playing against. I think the goal of what they're trying to do is sort of keep people engaged, because people's attention spans are shorter these days. Surprise, I don't know how that's
a thing. In other words, you want to be able to play a game while pooping.
Yeah.
It's really what it is. Like, eventually they're going to get it on mobile.
And
when you're taking a nice, yes, when you're taking a nice poop, it'd be nice. And I did this with Duels of the Planeswalker. I got to be honest. There were times I'm sitting there and I'm playing on the John. Why? Because I'm on the John. What else am I doing?
Can't unsee that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing, man. One handed holding that, the other with toilet paper. It's great.
Oh, boy.
So, I mean, but anyway, Yeah, I think that I think you're right, and it sucks because I think that's a that's an aspect of Magic that I don't think should go away. I think it's what a lot of the pros, when I listen, like I said, I listen to a lot of the podcasts, and a lot of them have the same fears, but a lot of them also say the same thing, that it sounds like odds are good that it's going this way, that they're going to stick with the best of one for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you said it best. I mean, you know, we were talking offline a few times, and you lose the ability to sideboard, mm-hmm. and that is an ability, you know,
yep.
and to not have that ability to sit there and sideboard and to, and it is, it's a skill that you have to practice and learn. Like, I'm playing this deck, this is what I need to bring in, and it's how you tune your deck. To lose that with Arena, I think, is a mistake.
And it also kind of invalidates entire archetypes of decks, because somebody made a good point about this. I think it was on MTG Goldfish. I don't know if it was Saffron Olive or not. I'd have to look it up. But Best of One Arena, it basically caters mostly towards linear aggro and linear control slash combo. Mid-range decks kind of get left in the dust because their whole deal is being able to say, over the course of a three-game match, I'm going to be able to pick and choose what I'm doing to beat you. Whereas in a best of one, you get a bad mana draw. Sorry. You know, try again next time.
And there is a lot of mana screwing going on. And don't get me started.
The shuffler is random. The shuffler is random.
Oh, I had a fight with a guy on Reddit this week about it. But yeah, going on. You know, it's here's the thing. I am laddering up, okay? And I laddered up. I got to gold on Red Deck Wins because, again, best of one.
Mm-hmm.
Second game, they'd roll me. But then, and then what it is now is I was stuck in gold three for the longest time. And then gold four, and then I started realizing, I'm like, I'm going to try to play Turbo Fog. And all of a sudden, Turbo Fog, I'm winning because it's a best of one. Now, if we had a second game, they'd be pulling any of the blue, they'd be pulling counter spells.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the, you know, so you could tune your deck. But with a Turbo Fog deck, it's like when I see a Duress or when I see a Thought Erasure, I'm like, I'm out. I just automatically concede. I'm not even going to play.
Turbo Fog is extremely weak to heavy control decks. Those are still winnable games. I have won plenty of games with Turbo Fog against control. I've been playing almost exclusively Turbo Fog in Arena since they started the new ranked format. I actually just last night finally deigned gold one.
Really?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I'm two pips in.
I do like that you don't go below. I like that they let you stay your rank. Like, no matter how much you lose, you go to gold one.
You stay in the grade of metal. But you can drop levels. So, like, if I lost three or four games in a row, I would drop from gold one to gold two. So, but once you get to platinum four, you can't drop below platinum.
That's nice.
So, you know, it's tough because if you lose against control game one, you don't have the chance to board in your negates or your Carnage Tyrants or whatever you have against control for game two, because there is no game two.
Exactly. So, that, I think they're going to fix it. But, you know, you can find us on there, and maybe at some point we'll put up maybe on the Facebook page, which we are on a Facebook page. You know, you can find us on there. Maybe we'll put our gamer tags, and you guys can direct challenge us. In fact, I think when we finish this recording, we're going to actually pivot over to the Twitch and do a little bit of him and I going head-to-head. So we'll figure that out. Either I'll Skype it or something. We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
But I think we should wrap things up because we're getting down to the. I like to keep these at a 1 hour mark.
Okay.
You know, just because, you know, it's a good drive to work.
Yeah, we got lots to talk about.
Yeah, we will. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to try to do two or three. We're going to back these up. So this won't go out this week, probably not. So when you guys get this, Ravnica Allegiance may already be released. I may just throw this out, but then it'll be a couple of weeks. I want to put two or three in the bag. Just to kind of get them ready. I really want to fine tune this podcast. The goal is this, guys. I want to see Planeswalkers become a brand. And you know what? If there are two guys out there that want to talk modern, you know, we could talk about auditioning and putting together, you can put together a show and send it to us, and you know, we'll do that and we'll see what we can do. And if somebody wants to talk Legacy, and if somebody wants to talk, you know, Pro Tour or just events, you know, I'd like to see a Magic network called Planeswalkers, where it's just us talking about magic and this thing that we love to do. So, you know, there, that's my long-term goal. And patrons may come along with that. Sponsors may come along with that. That'd be great. I mean, I'm going to be paying $15 a month to host this thing. Sure, I'd love a little bit back, but I'm not going to worry about it right now. You know, right now, I just want to do it. I love broadcasting, and I love talking magic.
So yeah, and I love great. Magic, so and getting a chance to talk about magic is cool.
All right, so if there's anything you want to hear us talk about, you can reach out to us. Look for Plains Talkers on Facebook. You can email us at podcast at plainstalkerspodcast.com. And you can find us on Twitch, and eventually there'll be a Twitter. So, but with that, I think we're right at the one-hour mark. Look at that. I think we're going to back this out. We're going to sign off now. Aramis, any last words, thoughts, concerns, comments?
Twitch handle is RMEC, WRX.
Yes, and I am MindCrime73 on Twitter or on Twitch, and I'll give you my my full handle on arenas at some point so you can direct challenge me. But yeah, with that, we're going to get on out of here. We want to thank you guys for listening, our first inaugural show. Really appreciate everybody, you know, being a part of this and coming along for the ride. I hope you guys subscribe using whatever podcast catcher you've got. You know, check out the Facebook page, check out Twitch, and you have a good one. For Aramis, I am Will Benson, and I want to thank you.